This is In Conversation from Apple News. I'm Shamita Basu. Today, the real threats to election integrity in America. Since former President Trump lost the 2020 presidential race, he has been spreading the false claim that the election was stolen and that the U.S. is rife with voter fraud. This has been disproven many times. State and federal judges have dismissed more than 50 lawsuits presented by Trump and his allies, challenging the outcome in 2020, saying there was no evidence of widespread voter fraud. And yet, this rhetoric has had a very real effect on the country. It's part of what galvanized people to attack the Capitol on January 6th. It's led to changes to voting rules in some states, and it's fueled distrust and paranoia around the voting process, though for different reasons.
When people say things like election integrity, they're often talking about very different things without realizing that they're having two different conversations.
That's Jessica Hoosman. She's the editorial director of the nonprofit news organization VoteBeat. She used to be the lead elections reporter for ProPublica for three federal election cycles. As Election Day 2024 approaches, I wanted to talk with Jessica to fact-check the lies being spread about our voting system and to better understand why we can all feel reassured that this election will be safe and fair.
I think so much works really well in our system today. There are a few major blowups every year, but when you consider that the United States has 10,000 voting jurisdictions and we're hearing about big problems in like one or two, that is an extraordinary success rate. Mm. And so I think that people should be really confident about their ability to go to the polls and cast a ballot and have that be the most boring thing that they've ever done, and then leave and have their ballot be counted as it was intended. That is how the vast majority of Americans will experience their voting day, right? Whether that happens on election day or during early voting. And so there's a lot of rhetoric around election integrity. And there are studies that show people don't trust elections elsewhere. Like if you ask a Republican who thinks that election integrity is very bad and you ask them why they think that, they'll say, oh, well, there's voter fraud in Philly. There's voter fraud in Detroit. And you're like, okay, how do you feel about your county's election administration? And they're like, oh, it's great. It's totally fine. And so what they don't trust is other people, not the people they know who are running the elections. Mm. And so I think if people were more aware of the steps that people in these places, in these highly scrutinized places like Detroit and Philly, are taking to ensure that every step of the process is followed, they would probably be a little bit more comfortable with the system as a whole.
Yeah, maybe I can ask you to just speak to that a little bit, like what works really well in our system today.
The machines are better than they've ever been. And I think that there is this myth that we're all casting ballots on these digital machines and that those little beep boop numbers are flying through the air and not touching human hands. And there's no proof that the digital ballots we're casting are counted in the way that we want. But that's actually not true. The vast majority, like more than 95% of Americans, will ultimately cast their ballot on paper, even if they are making the selections on a machine. Mm. That machine spits out a receipt with all of the choices, and what's counted is that physical paper and nothing that the machine itself is doing.
That's funny. I don't think a lot of people realize that.
I don't think that they do. You know, I think people talk a lot about paper ballots without realizing that they're already casting them. And so what's counted is those paper ballots. And if there's a dispute over the results or there's a recount call, they're recounting those physical paper ballots. And so there's a lot of security baked in all the way through this system. And the machines themselves actually give us a much better ability to ascertain voter intent. And I don't think people realize this either. I've been covering this stuff since before the 2016 election, and I have gone on lots of tours of offices that do mostly mail voting. So like in California, in Oregon, in Utah, like they're sending ballots out. People are taking a pen or whatever they have at their disposal and marking that ballot and then mailing it back. Well, people do weird stuff to ballots when they have a pen and a paper. Like they write whole treaties on the outside of them. I have seen ballots that are covered in coffee, that are covered in blood, where like, I don't know why, you know, they like make an X instead of filling in the bubble. And so voter intent becomes really hard to ascertain. And so it's left to a bipartisan group of poll workers to figure out and agree what that voter's intent was, right? And ballots can be really confusing and really long. And so people, you know, don't vote for a race accidentally, or they accidentally vote for two people in a race instead of one. That can invalidate your entire ballot. And if you're casting your ballot on a machine, the machine will not let you go forward if you've made an error, right? Like you have to go back and it prints out a ballot that can definitely be read by the tabulator and also human eyeballs. And so I think people discount the security that voting machines bring to the process and then also the accessibility that they bring to the process.
Well, so what are the real challenges to making sure that our elections are safe and secure?
Well, you know, in the last few years, we have seen a massive turnover in election administration and the people who do that work. And this used, and I just want to place this in context because, you know, city clerks and county clerks and county registrars, right? Like these used to be sleepy bureaucratic jobs. These people, mostly women who did this work, were left alone and they were lifelong bureaucrats. Like, I have talked to so many of them who, like, don't have a college degree, started as a secretary in the county clerk's office, and then 20 years later became county clerk, and they've just been that ever since, right? Like, they have this foundational understanding of the county and what it needs and the voters in that county. Well, since 2020, it started in 2016, but it's really been since 2020, those people have been so harangued that they're leaving their jobs. And so in a lot of these places, we have brand new election staff, not only the directors, but everyone underneath them. Like VoteBeat has covered a couple of different counties in which the entirety of the elections department has walked off the job because of the way that they've been treated. And so these counties are having to start from scratch training new employees. And that's where mistakes happen, right? Like naturally, that's where mistakes happen. And so I think that we're going to see a lot of human errors, and the people who are looking for election integrity issues will spin those up into conspiracy. And the way our system is set up, those human errors can almost always be fixed and almost always be fixed very quickly. And so at the end of the day, these errors don't affect the vote count, but the existence of them gives people more ammunition.
I mean, earlier this year, the Trump campaign and the Republican National Committee launched an election integrity program. That's what they're calling it. What do we know about it? What are the specifics of it? What does it suggest it can do or function as?
This is not new for the Republican Party. Some element of the Republican Party, whether it's like the leading campaign itself or the RNC, have been announcing election integrity measures since the 70s. And what they're recruiting for now, and what they have been recruiting for the duration of Trump's time in the political spotlight, is poll watchers. And they think that if they can get enough Republicans just scrutinizing every single thing that's happening about voting from the time the machines are dropped off at the polling location to the time ballots are finalized and counted, that they're going to catch all of this election malfeasance. That is not how this works for 100 different reasons, but chiefly because it's really difficult to recruit that number of people to do this really boring stuff. Like, have you ever spent a day at a polling location?
Actually, well, so as a reporter, I've spent not a whole day, but I've definitely spent more than 1 hour at one polling location.
And they're boring, right?
They're super boring.
They're super boring. Nothing happens. It's the most monotonous thing. We're talking about, like, give up your entire day or multiple days, if we're doing this during early voting, to go sit in a polling location and watch people vote, right? And so even if they can convince these people to show up on the first day, they don't show up on the second because they're like, oh, I'm going to go and I'm going to catch them stuffing ballot boxes. I'm going to go and I'm going to catch them sticking USB drives into voting machines. And obviously none of that is happening. And so they go home and they're like, that's it. There's nothing else that I can do. And so it sounds very scary when they're talking about flooding polling locations with poll watchers. But in practice, it never really amounts to much. And there's reasons for that, right? Like, usually in almost every state, you can only be a poll watcher in the county in which you are registered to vote. So the Trump campaign cannot bus people from rural Pennsylvania into Philadelphia and make them watch Philadelphia voters cast their ballots. They've got to recruit people inside of Philly. And so it's difficult to get people into the polling locations that they've made tropes, right? Like in Philly or Milwaukee or Houston or Phoenix, right? And so I think there are structural reasons why, at the end of the day, the Republican Party's election integrity units don't really amount to much.
Even in these last few weeks before Election Day, there have been efforts to change elections procedures in various states and push back to those efforts. I asked Jessica about Georgia, which has been in the news a lot lately. She's been following the state closely for years.
I was actually in Georgia, embedded in the Secretary of State's office on January 6th. And so I've stayed in touch with that office as it sort of figured out where to go from there.
In recent months, the Georgia State Board of Elections passed a number of changes to voting rules, including requiring counties to hand count ballots and instituting procedures that could delay election certification. Local election officials, including some Republicans, have spoken out against these new rules. Georgia's Republican Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, spoke to the local TV station WRBL about some of the problems with these rule changes.
Everything we've done since 2020 is make sure we have free, fair, and fast elections. And what they're doing now is slowing down the process. And that's just a conspiracy, you know, theory waiting to happen because you're not getting those quick results. And that's not helpful for our republic.
These changes were challenged in court. And with just weeks to go until Election Day, many of them were rejected, with one judge calling them illegal, unconstitutional, and void. Jessica says these kinds of 11th-hour moves can create a lot of uncertainty and confusion for the people who work in election administration.
The closer you get to elections, and, you know, poll worker guidelines have already been printed. Poll workers are being trained. The more that you change what the rules are for their behavior and their activities that day, the more mistakes they're likely to make. And that is just a proven fact.
Another state I asked Jessica about was Arizona, where in 2020, Joe Biden won the state by just over 10,000 votes. The state became and remains a hotspot of debunked election fraud claims.
You know, Arizona was where the cyber ninjas people popped off, right? After 2020, they decided that they were going to recount all of Maricopa County's votes by hand. They hired this fly-by-night company called Cyber Ninjas to come in and do that for them. They messed up at every step of that audit process to the point where their results are basically meaningless. And I'm sure we'll see all of that again, right? Like, we will see lawsuits. We will see attempts by the Republicans in the House and the Senate to scrutinize the votes of Maricopa County, which is where Phoenix is, and it's by far the largest county in Arizona. And I think we'll just see that all over again because this is a state that Trump thought he'd won, right? And the circumstances around his loss have motivated the people there even more to be even more sort of vicious around these issues. And so I think it's not unlikely that in Arizona we will see poll watchers cause havoc where they won't in other states and try to get right up in the faces of poll workers where they probably won't in other states. It's a particularly angry setting right now.
Well, what about certification of votes? I mean, in 2022, we saw in Arizona, at least one county refused to certify the results. Is that a risk going into 2024?
I don't think it's as big of a risk as a lot of people think. And I think that because certification is not an option, right? Certification is required by law. And so when people refuse to certify under specious grounds, they can be criminally prosecuted. Mm. And so the people in Cochise County, Arizona, were prosecuted for this, like had to hire attorneys, had to defend themselves in court. And I just don't think that they're going to do that again. And certification delays a number of things, right? Like if certification is delayed, local candidates can't take office. And so local candidates and local voters then have legal grounds to file a lawsuit against these people as well. Mm. And so I think that secretaries of state in Arizona, in Georgia, in Michigan are way more prepared for this fight than they were in 2020. In 2020, that was a new thing. In 2024, secretaries of state really feel like it's baked in. Mm. And so I've talked to secretaries of state who are like, yeah, no, we're not worried about this at all. We have already found a voter in every single county who is willing to be a plaintiff in the lawsuit, and that lawsuit is written. And so as soon as they refuse to certify, we're filing it.
Mm. Now, I know that you're based in Texas. Can you talk about what you're seeing going on there?
Yeah. So, you know, in Texas, they have really globbed on to this conversation around non-citizen voting. Mm-hmm. And so Greg Abbott, the governor here, and Ken Paxton, the attorney general, have both released like very aggressive press releases claiming falsely that there are 65,000 non-citizens on the roll. That's not true. The data shows that that's not true, but they're claiming it anyway. And they're trying to make the Secretary of State get the list of non-citizens from the federal government and run the voter rolls against that list, which for a lot of reasons is a fruitless exercise.
Why is that?
The United States actually does not have a comprehensive list of every non-citizen. How could they? They don't even have a comprehensive list of citizens, right? There is no national ID here. Mm-hmm. So there is no list of everyone who is legally in the United States and possessed of an ID. Likewise, there is no major list of every non-citizen. The non-citizens on that list are people who are in the country legally and therefore have a TIF or an alien ID number, or who have claimed asylum or who have presented themselves to the federal government in such a way that the federal government knows that they're here and has documentation of them. Mm-hmm. You know, non-citizen is not synonymous with illegal immigrant. And I think that people, when they talk about non-citizens, that's who they're talking about. But they don't realize that what they're actually getting is the list of people who are legally here.
Mm. I mean, what does that say to you?
I mean, I think it says that this is just a talking point. And they're seeding the field with things that they can use later to call the results into question.
Can we talk a little bit about timing of results as a sign of election integrity? I mean, this idea that a delay in knowing what the results are is a sign that something is going wrong. And this has become more common. I think people are becoming more accustomed to this idea that we may not know the results late that day on election day or later that night. What is that a sign of? And is it something bad?
No, it's nothing bad. Taking a long time to get the results is, in fact, how it has always been. We are used to, as voters, seeing the election called on election night on our favorite network and just assuming that the election is over. But those are not official results, and the results don't become official for a really long time, right? In most states, they have several days after the election to finish counting ballots, to get mailed ballots that may have been delayed in the mail but are postmarked before election day and count those too. All of that has to be done by humans, and it takes a lot of time. And so official results are not announced in most states for several days anyway, and they never have been, right? So people have probably heard about, like, Safe Harbor Day, and, like, they don't really know what that means. But it's sort of the last day that everything becomes final. And this year, that is December 11th.
That's a long time later.
Right. So we're talking about a month and change.
Yeah.
That is when the results become official. And we will know who won the election, I'm sure, way before then, because most that's happening towards the end is, like, fine-tuning. But, you know, also, I think one of the reasons that people have become more comfortable with this idea is because we had to rely on the mail so heavily in 2020. And so as vote by mail has grown in the United States, election results are taking longer to calculate. And that is fine. That is what you would expect. And if a county were to have results on election night and certify them, I would say that they hadn't done their due diligence. And I would be concerned about the integrity of that election. Mm-hmm. And so an election where all the steps are followed takes several days. It's not instantaneous. It is not easy to arrive at that conclusion. It takes hundreds of people working in concert together. And so there is simply nothing wrong if we don't know the results on election night.
I mean, is there some version of this where proposals being made in some places by Republicans that would add more time to processing votes?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any version where Democrats agree to doing that because they can make the case that everything happened the way it should, more thoroughly? It took more time, but it happened more thoroughly.
You know, I think one of the biggest ways to solve, to sort of make middle ground here, is to allow states to pre-process absentee ballots. So a lot of states can't start counting mail ballots until election day. And because those are the ballots that take the longest to count, that is often what is delaying official results. In other states, they can sort of start processing those ballots as soon as they're received or 5 days before the election, right? And so by the time the election starts, they're already through this massive pile of absentee ballots and mail-in ballots that they have gotten before election day. And so that speeds things along. Republicans have become more okay with things like that. But there is a contingent of Republicans who are like, no, election day is election day. We shouldn't have early voting. We shouldn't have mail-in voting. We should all count the ballots on election day. We should all vote on that one day. And that's the only way we're going to secure our elections. I genuinely don't understand the logic of that. Making an entire county do a really complicated thing in a single day is insane. It's an insane prospect.
Mm. And what about after Election Day? What are you watching for when it comes to possible litigation this year? What are some of your big concerns?
I mentioned earlier that secretaries of state are way more prepared for the certification debate in court than they were in 2020. And so that is true. But on the other hand, the Republicans have also had 4 years to prepare their sort of lines of argumentation and learn from their failures in 2020 in front of the court. I don't think that that means that they will be more effective this year, but I do think it means they will be more prolific in their lawsuits. So in the last 4 years, the Republican Party and the Democratic Party have put a lot more money towards litigation. So they are both way more resourced. They can hire more attorneys. They can move more quickly. And so I expect there to be more of those people, but I don't expect that the quality of the lawsuits are going to go up substantially. Mm. And none of those lawsuits will impact what the results were or were not, but will throw chaos into the process and sow doubt in people who are already predisposed to believe that the election is flawed.
Well, that's exactly it, right? The idea of sowing so much doubt. I mean, that's my big worry, I think, in this election is the damage that has already been done to how people perceive our election systems in this country. And I guess for someone like you who spends so much time thinking about this, I mean, where do you think we're at? I mean, do we come back from this? How do we put people's trust back in the system?
Republicans are going to have to cool it, right? Like, they're going to have to start talking about the system in realistic terms. And I think that there is a faction of the Republican Party that is getting there. And I say that because you can only say the system is so flawed that the results don't matter so many times before people are like, okay, well, I'm just not going to vote then. What's the point? And Democrats are not the people who think that. Republicans are the people who think that. And I think that there is a case to be made that Trump's rhetoric around vote by mail lost the Republican Party both of the Senate seats in the runoff in early 2021 that I was there for and watched. The moment that the results were final enough to make a call, I was sitting next to Brad Raffensperger, and he looked at me and he goes, Trump did this.
Mm.
That's what he said.
By disparaging mail-in voting.
Mm-hmm. Mm. And I think he's right, because Republicans chose not to participate and Democrats didn't have that issue, right? And so you see the Republican Party right now trying to do a couple of different things at once. Like, the Republican Party is putting out these ads that are like, vote by mail, vote early.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The official campaign line seems to have changed a lot on that, encouraging people to vote by mail now.
Right, exactly. And that's the sort of shift I'm talking about. And mm-hmm. I think that mm-hmm. as Republicans realize that they are hurting themselves, this will stop happening. And so the same is true, for example, in places that refuse to certify the election, right? You can only not certify your county's elections. The counties that are most willing to do that are like ruby red counties, right? And so they're disenfranchising themselves when they do this stuff.
Mm.
And I think it's going to take a really long time for the Republican Party to undo that damage. And I will be interested to see how different the message is on voting if Donald Trump loses this election. Like, what does election integrity look like in a post-Trump era for the Republican Party? Mm. And I don't know, right? I really don't know.
I mean, is standardization across the country completely unattainable? Would it solve some of these problems that we're talking about?
It might. It might. But you know what? I think something that is unique about the American system is that there is sort of security through diffusion here. So Dallas County does not use the same machines as Tarrant County. We're right next door to each other. And we are not using the same voting system that Georgia is using. And so the ability to, I'm going to use the word hack, even though I hate that word, to hack an election is basically impossible at scale. You would have to have somebody in every precinct in every county, right, screwing with stuff and being really secret about it, right? And so it's difficult to manipulate huge facets of the system. And so that's like a little bit of a silver lining of this.
Jessica, are there any sort of voting best practices that you can leave people with? And I know they're different in different places in terms of the law and how voting is carried out in different counties. But maybe there's just some reminders that work across the board for people. What should people know?
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Follow the ballot instructions. Follow them.
Yes.
Read them. Make sure that you have dotted all of your I's and crossed all of your T's and done every stupid thing that your state requires you to do. This is especially important for mail-in ballots, because you're going to cast that ballot and you're going to mail it in, and there's not going to be a poll worker there to help you figure out how to cast that ballot effectively or to make sure that you've signed the back of your envelope or, in Pennsylvania, dated your envelope appropriately and in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not following those instructions, you're going to make a mistake, and that's going to make it more likely that your ballot will get rejected. If you are casting your ballot in person, listen to what the poll workers are telling you and make sure that you have asked questions if you are confused, right? This is like something we do for a few minutes once every 4 years, maybe every two if we're very excited about the civic process.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to do something effectively that you do not often do, knowing that, a lot of laws have changed in the last 4 years. And knowing that your polling location might be in a slightly different place or might be slightly differently organized than you're used to, that's really the best way to ensure that you're going to have an unmemorable voting experience, which is what I hope for everyone, honestly. I hope they forget voting the next day.
That's good advice, Jessica. Step one, read the instructions. Know the instructions, yes. Jessica, thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This was fun. I loved it.
You can read Jessica Huseman's reporting for VoteBeat on Apple News. We'll include a link to it on our show notes page.